You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Reinvention Project with Jim Rome podcast. Welcome to episode 83 of the Reinvention Project with Jim Rome. As always, I appreciate you making the time to consume this pod as there are millions of other options out there, literally. And I want to make sure that you're getting a return on your invested time. So that said, let me jump right into this episode. It's an episode on mindset. That's right. Another episode on mindset. Why another episode on mindset? Well, because I can't think of anything more critical to you living the life you want to live than mindset. I can't do enough episodes on mindset. So I found another authority on the topic, Gavin McHale, and I'll introduce you to him a little bit later on. In the meantime, let me hit you right off the top with a few of my own thoughts on mindset and what kind of a headspace I'm currently in. As anybody listening knows, this is a podcast about reinvention, my thoughts, and my reinvention experiences, while simultaneously bringing in experts to help you become who and what you've always wanted to be, but maybe never knew how to go about it. While I've been doing this podcast for nearly 3 years now, I am now at one of the biggest inflection points of my entire life, a major freaking intersection or fork in the road, if you will. To suggest it's go time would be the ultimate understatement of my career. My working model right now is all in, all out, every freaking day from here on out. Again, all in, all out, every freaking day from here on out. Every second counts. So, why this intense sense of urgency? Because I have a mission, and with that mission, an obsession to execute on that mission, and with that mission, an inherent blueprint for how to conduct myself and carry out the mission. Once again, this is simple. Simple, but not easy. I have my mission. I've been granted an amazing opportunity, an opportunity to completely reinvent my business and my brand, a legacy opportunity, if you will. And it is my mission to crush this opportunity because I'm fully aware and I recognize what it's worth. This is more than just locating and using my North Star for navigation. This is exactly what it sounds like. It's a mission, and I'm obsessed with the mission. This mission now is the very first thing I think of when my feet hit the floor in the morning. It centers me and it gives me a blueprint for how to think and how to act, a mindset, if you will. Once again, I know exactly what this mission is and I am fully committed to that mission. Therefore, all my thoughts and actions are in accordance or alignment with the mission. In other words, I'm constantly scanning my mental hard drive, auditing my own thoughts, and asking myself, is this thought or action in alignment with my mission? If so, I maintain that thought or I perform that action. If not, I disregard the thought and I don't do what isn't in alignment with the mission. In other words, either I'm in alignment or I'm not. Does it serve me or not? If it does, I pour into it. If it doesn't, I immediately reject it and replace it with something that does. Now, does it always work that way? Of course not. But I'm in a constant state of course correction. I'm constantly looking to win the battle within, constantly looking to execute on that mission. And if I do fall off the path, that's fine. It's fine as long as I jump right back on as quickly as possible. Again, I know exactly what I want, and I've got a very good idea on what I have to do in order to achieve it. So if it serves me, I'll think and do it and consume it. If it doesn't, I just don't. Now, I'll tell you something else I've been thinking about quite a bit lately. I saw a post from a good friend of mine, Matthew Calderoni. Matthew and his brother are the founders of a great company called Mauletium, and they work with high achievers, young, old, and everything in between, as well as many, many elite athletes. Matthew reminds us only to focus on the controllables. Now, we know this, but he, and I'm paraphrasing here, he points out that there really are only three things that you can control. And if you control these three things, your chances for success are obviously exponentially higher. Again, simple but not easy. The three things are as follows: preparation, work ethic, and attitude. So let me go ahead and throw an acronym on that. PAW. PAW. Preparation, attitude, and work ethic. Now that post really resonated with me. Number one, we're all looking for separation. And to me, if you dominate those three areas, you've got a chance to dominate your space, whatever that space is, and in turn your life. Let's break it down really quickly. Preparation. That one obviously speaks to me and always has. Preparation breeds confidence. Always be preparing and you'll always be prepared. Attitude. This is one, frankly, that I'm working harder than ever on, both internally and externally. How you communicate with yourself and the external world is so critical. What you're telling yourself and then how you're communicating with others is so crucial. For instance, I know I'm at my very best when I'm communicating with high energy and positivity, and I know how I feel and how others react when I do that, just as I know how ineffective I am when my attitude is mid and I'm not operating at a highest possible frequency. Best of all, it's a choice, and it is controllable. And when I'm not where I need to be, I'm self-aware enough to quickly reset and dial it back up. Finally, number three, work ethic. That one is easy, at least for me. From day one, I've never really seen myself as exceptional in any way, any category. Therefore, I negotiated a contract with myself early in my career that would be non-negotiable. Again, a contract that I negotiated with myself that would be non-negotiable, and that was to win the war of attrition, to grind longer and harder than anybody I came up against, to be the hardest worker in the room. That would be my calling card. That would be my ultimate separation. Be willing to do the things that others were not willing to do, and be willing to do them consistently. Again, as my dude Matt Calderoni would say, only focus on those things that you can control, and the only things you really can control are the most important to control: your preparation, your attitude, and your work ethic. And then on top of that, I would add two more to that list. Discipline. Discipline is one. Or as Jocko Willink famously says, unmitigated daily discipline in all things. Then I would add to the list ownership. Own everything in your life. I mean everything. Don't ever blame anybody else for anything ever again. Own everything in your life. Embrace the suck. Make everything in your life, especially the suck, an exercise in mental toughness and discipline, and then convert it all into clean burning fuel. Again, I have found my mission. I am creating a personal culture that I use to complete that mission, and those are the main principles that I'm leaning into right now and using to crush the mission. Preparation, attitude, work ethic, discipline, ownership, and the knowledge that everything good is on the other side of hard. So find your mission, become obsessed with that mission, and if you're not obsessed with it, you damn well better get obsessed with it, or it's not a mission at all, is it? It's just lip service. It's actually bullshit. It's a lie. So, this brings us all back to mindset. I've spoken to many mindset experts on this pod because every single high achiever that I've ever interviewed in my career or spent time with possessed an elite mindset. But as we'll find out from our guest today, it doesn't mean that these very same people don't have their self-doubts or lose confidence at times or experience imposter syndrome. In fact, as Gavin McHale will tell you, every single high achiever that you ever have encountered or will encounter battles imposter syndrome. Every single one. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. It's a necessary thing. If you want to be great and possess an elite mindset, you need that. It's episode 83 of the Reinvention Project with mindset expert and personal development coach Gavin McHale, and it's coming at you right now. So I'm glad that we finally have been able to do so, my man. Thank you very much for carving out the time. Gavin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, man. I've been waiting for the opportunity, just waiting in the wings, you know?
Well, we are finally here, so I appreciate you, and I appreciate you making time. I know what your schedule is like. You know, let me start right here. The first line of your Instagram bio makes me chuckle. Quote, former hockey bro turned mindset coach. Quote, end of quote. So before we talk mindset, let's talk a little hockey. Now, you know, this is not my sports podcast, but I want the listeners to understand who and what we're talking about here. We'll talk a little hockey. Did you find the sport, or did the sport find you?
Well, I'm a Canadian kid from the prairies who grew up in, you know, early 90s watching Don Cherry rock 'em sock 'em. So I guess you could say the sport found me. I literally became a goalie because I was, you know, playing mini hockey sticks with my buddy and I was good at being a goalie. So, you know, yes, the sport definitely found me.
Being around sports media for a lifetime has taught me that sometimes it is exploring the sliding doors, moments, and what-if scenarios in sports that can be the very best part of the fan experience. For instance, what if the Seahawks let Marshawn run on the one-yard line with the Super Bowl on the line? Or could a coin flip have landed Magic in Chicago and MJ in LA? Enter Wondery's newest sports show, Alternate Roots, a weekly leap into the sports multiverse with former SportsCenter anchors Trey Wingo and Kevin Frazier. Each week on the podcast, Trey and Kevin will pry open the sliding doors of a different what-if moment from the world of sports. In these alternate sports realities, dynasties will fall, legacies will change forever, new goats will emerge. Follow Alternate Roots on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Alternate Roots early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. All right, so Don Cherry, man, he was a wild man. Back in the day, he would come on the program. He was a wild man and the biggest thing there. So, Kevin, what about, I mean, playing goalie is something different. It takes a very different breed to stand between the pipes and face pucks that come at you 100 miles an hour. Like, did you feel like you were a different kind of sort? Why goalie?
Yeah, yes and no. To be honest, I think that the reason I chose goalie is because I was good at it. And you know, this will probably kind of turn to some of the mindset stuff we talk about later. You know, I leaned into things that I was good at because they gave me the validation, right? So being a goalie, it allowed me to, you know, all my teammates liked me because I was really good. And then I made better teams. So I got the better jacket. So the girls liked me more in, you know, junior high and high school. So I think that was the main reason. And then I think we're all a little crazy. So, you know, I just fit the mold of where most of us are, you know?
I like that. So, of course, we're talking about external validation, which we will get to a little bit later on. So how far did you get in the sport and what kind of a player were you?
Yeah, so again, this kind of ties into a lot of my mindset story is I played junior hockey. I played in the Western Hockey League for the Seattle Thunderbirds and the Lethbridge Hurricanes, and then bounced around playing tier two junior in Western Canada, played a couple of years with the University of Manitoba Bisons. And I don't know if our mutual friend Craig mentioned to you, I have a pretty interesting story about getting one game as an emergency backup goalie with the Washington Capitals. And that's where the career ended for me.
All right, no, actually, I know a lot about your background and your career. I do not know that story. Tell that story. What happened?
Yeah, so I was 31 years old, so it's 2018. For those who don't know, the NHL has this really interesting rule where there needs to be a third goalie in the building who is not paid by either team. So you are a completely, objective observer, and you could dress for either team if a goalie gets hurt. I got that gig, I think when they brought it in, maybe 2015 or 16. Unfortunately, I think I maybe aged out in COVID. They stopped calling me. But one night, you know, we got to choose our games. There was five or six goalies who did it. We got to choose our games. I, of course, chose the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals game because I wanted to watch the game. And about 5 p.m. rolled around and I got a phone call saying, we need you. You know, we need you to come and we need you to dress for us. Braden Holtby, their starting goalie at the time, I think he was sick or something. And so I had to, you know, zip downtown and in Winnipeg Jets game day traffic, and got down there just before 6 p.m. Had to do the whole full like physical and signed an amateur tryout contract. And they unpacked all my gear for me, got everything ready, gave me the, you know, the Washington Capitals under gear and the hat and all that. And I got to basically be a part of the team, which was so cool. Dressed in the locker room, met all the big names, Alex Ovechkin and all those folks. And then I got to warm up with the team. Unfortunately, I didn't stop too many shots. I only had a few, about 5 minutes of fame in the warmup. And then I got a front row seat to watch the game. So it was a really cool experience that I'll never forget.
So, Gavin, it's a great story, and it's a really cool experience. And then you've had a lot of experiences, some really cool and some not as cool like the rest of us. What about the time you were 17? There was kind of a life-changing moment at that point, right, when you're playing the game, and things were coming relatively easily to you at that point. What happened that night?
Yeah, so things, you know, had been coming easily to me, the, you know, my whole life really in terms of hockey. And then I got into junior and it started getting harder. You know, you're facing better players, there's more expectations on you. And the real issue here was I didn't know how to face failure. I didn't know how to deal with failure. I thought that failure meant I wasn't a good enough human being. You know, I was so afraid of it. So I steered away from it. I started blaming everybody else. And on this particular, you know, couple months leading up to it, the wheels were starting to fall off. I was losing games. I was struggling. I was losing focus. I was blaming my teammates and my coaches. And New Year's Eve, it was New Year's Eve 2005. I was playing for the Seattle Thunderbirds, and we were playing our rivals from Portland in the New Year's Eve game. There was 10,000 people in the stands in Portland. And, the game got a little out of hand. They were kind of stomping us. We just weren't playing very well. And I decided that I was going to get involved in a line brawl. So everyone on the ice is fighting. Usually the goalies just kind of hang out in their crease. I decided that I wanted to get involved. And little did I know that as I got involved, the other goalie was barreling down the ice, shedding his gloves, and basically turned me around, ripped my helmet off, and the first punch just exploded my nose. Never been in a fight before. I've never been in a fight since. This definitely told me that I'm not a fighter, but that punch to the face and just like the broken nose and the concussion and all that stuff, it was really this symbol of like what life was trying to punch me in the face, right? Life was trying to tell me that I needed to change how I was thinking and how I was acting if I wanted to get to where I wanted to go. And of course I didn't listen because I was an 18-year-old kid, but it was a really symbolic moment that I think, you know, was an inflection point in my life.
Gavin, it's an incredible story. Like, I think we have some listeners right now that don't know sports the way we know sports. Goalies do not fight. Goalies do not fight. Rarely do goalies drop gloves. And if they do, they normally fight the other goaltender. Fact of the matter is, my man, you are not a small dude. You are a big dude. Well, did he sucker punch you? You just didn't know how to fight? What were you thinking in that moment? Why were you so frustrated that you got caught up? Were you not thinking? What were you doing dropping gloves?
Yeah, it's funny when I think back on it that it was a moment where the wires crossed. And I really wasn't thinking. I thought this would be cool if I got in a fight, but I didn't think of the ramifications of actually being in a fight, right? So first of all, yes, I'm a big dude. He was also a big dude. He was like 6'4". And I am not a fighter. I did not know how to fight at all. And so I wasn't prepared for him to turn me around. And what actually happened was I took a big swing and I completely missed. And so I just left my face
wide open,
basically wide open for his fist. So needless to say, I can give people tips on how not to fight. That's about it from that. But yeah, it was this moment where I didn't think through the consequences really. And life showed me the consequences pretty quickly.
All right, so this background is really helpful. I'm glad you took the time to lay that out. So before we talk mindset, You are a mindset expert. Before we actually talk mindset, why don't you first define it for us? How would you define mindset? Why is it so critical?
Man, everyone always talks about how important. I remember playing hockey, people talking about how important it was to, you know, work the muscle between the ears, so to speak, right? And I think mindset really encompasses how do you think about your life as it's happening? How do you relate to and respond to? What is your perspective on the things that are happening around you? So, for example, right, say something bad happens in your life that you don't want to happen. There are several different perspectives that you could take on that. And I think that is what defines your mindset. Really, quite simply, how do you think about things?
So let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order three packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. You know, so I like that. For instance, what was your mindset like growing up?
Oh, man. My mindset growing up was, for lack of a better, well, the encompassing thing was that it was a middle-class mindset. It was the mindset of, we don't want to be too successful to bring attention to ourselves, but we're going to judge the people who are successful. And we also like just operate out of fear, like be safe, be secure, don't take risks, make sure that you kind of protect the downside. That was my overall mindset growing up, was one of just like, just blend in.
So, I mean, well, for instance, you're 6'7". It's hard to blend in. You're a real good athlete. It's hard to blend in. But where was that coming from? Was that your parents who were hammering that into you?
Yeah, I hate to put it all on my parents. You know, my parents, dad was a cop, mom was a teacher, right? So very, very much follow the rules type jobs. But I also think it's from just our culture and the way society, you know, if you watch the news, if you're not careful when you watch movies and watch TV shows and watch commercials and listen to the radio, all this stuff is really piled on us of this whole middle-class mindset when it comes to money, when it comes to how we think about the world. I think that it's piled on us. And I think it's this whole thing, like, we're getting indoctrinated into a cult without even knowing it when we're young children and when we're young people. And that's, so yeah, mom and dad have played a part in it, but it's not just them. It's the entire system, in my opinion. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories and rants, but it's the whole system that we get put into.
All right. So what we're talking about, a middle-class mindset, and I don't think anybody, neither you nor I mean, money's nice. Money yeah. Can help in a lot of ways, and money will not fix a lot of things that you just assume that it will fix. But I think middle-class mindset, I mean, you can call it that, or we can call it a limiting mindset. We can call it a fixed mindset. Are these things interchangeable? And then secondarily, what do you do to shake it if it's not a good thing?
Yeah, 100%. These things are interchangeable, right? Carol Dweck in the book Mindset talks about the difference between fixed mindset and growth mindset, right? So fixed mindset is I'm on a stage performing for people, right? And if I make a mistake, then I get found out, right? Which is that whole like external validation piece that I struggled with when it came to hockey. If I failed, that means that they found me out that, you know, I'm a fraud and they caught me, versus the growth mindset, which is you're playing in the sandbox, go make mistakes, go build things, knock them down, see what happens, learn from it. And I feel like that is the mindset that more successful people have. And maybe it's not necessarily, I don't think, what they're born with, it's what they see, right? And so a middle-class mindset is very much, well, we don't really have the option to build a sandcastle and knock it down. We need to play it safe. We need to be really careful. So make sure that you're not taking too many risks, because that could put you into the lower class, right? While it could definitely get you into the higher class and the upper, you know, the upper world of income, it could also knock you down. So we'd rather just stay here in this mediocrity.
All right. So what we're talking about is the way we frame things, or what we're talking about is a perspective or a change of perspective. But are we talking about something technical? For instance, and I know you work on this with clients and other people, the need to or the ability to rewire your brain. I'm fascinated by that. How do we go about technically actually rewiring our brain? Is it a figure of speech, or is it something you can actually do?
It's something, it's 100% something you can actually do. And this started way, way back with, you know, people like Einstein talked about this. More recently, people have popularized it, like a guy named Dr. Joe Dispenza, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
I am.
I don't know if your listeners are. He's amazing. But the quote that really gets me, and I think encapsulates all of this, is from a guy named Carl Jung, who is, you know, the godfather of modern psychology, in my opinion. And his quote is, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. And this is living an unconscious life is what a lot of us are doing until we have that wake up moment. Now, for some people, that's a moment of clarity through something that happens to them, or sometimes it's, you know, through pursuing growth that they have this moment of clarity. And the whole process of rewiring your brain starts with making the unconscious conscious. And what I mean by that is the things that you don't even think to question, bringing those to the surface. And the way I do this with a lot of people on, I'll often do this in a more acute setting, like say we're on a coaching call, and I'll just have them explain to me what's frustrating them. And I think just because I've done it for so long and had so many reps that a lot of times I can hear what they're not saying, right? I can hear what they're saying between the lines. But on a big picture, if someone listening to this wanted to do it, I think the easiest way is go back and look at the major inflection points in your life. Where are the points of your life where before that happened was different from after it happened, right? So for me, getting punched in the face in a hockey fight, even for me when I left home to go play hockey in another country, that's an inflection point in my life. So look back on those inflection points. Maybe you had some moments like I did where life punched you in the face. This is going to start to unlock and bring to the surface your unconscious story. Okay. That unconscious story is what leads to what I call emergency breaks, right? So we have all these things that happen, and when they happen, our brain's number one job is to protect us, right? So our brain will go, hey, let me just create this rule to protect you and keep you safe right now as a 12-year-old kid who's being bullied or something. But now when you're 30 years old, it's still using that same programming to protect you, and it's not serving you anymore, right? It's an emergency brake keeping you from going to where you want to go. So when we get these inflection points or these moments where life punched us in the face, then I'll ask people, what did you make that mean about yourself, right? what did you make it mean about yourself when, you know, you were struggling at hockey? Well, I made it mean that if I fail, that means that I suck. That means that I have failed as a human being. That's a lot of pressure to put on a kid. And that's the pressure that I put on myself, right? And these are the stories that when I was 30 years old, trying to grow my business, I was avoiding failure because I was scared of it, because I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to make mistakes. But as we now know, that's the only way that we can grow. So that's, I think, the way that we can start to pull the unconscious thoughts to the conscious. And then if you want me to keep going, Jim, there's definitely some, once we get these beliefs, then we can actually do the true process of rewiring or rewriting those stories.
Yeah, I would actually like you to finish that thought. You keep going on that, sure, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah. So we've got, you know, we've got these inflection points. They come to these beliefs that we have about ourselves. Let's say this is a really, really common one. And it seems really simple, but a lot of people's beliefs boil down to this, of this, like, I'm not good enough to deserve what I want, right? I work with a lot of business owners, so they want to make more money, but they believe that they're not good enough for some reason, right? So let's work with that belief. So this belief, I'm not good enough, whether it's true or it's not true, it's not serving the person. So if we can choose what to believe, why not choose something that actually serves where we want to go? So this next section comes from someone named Byron Katie. It's very simply, I've learned it to be called the four questions, or even simpler, the work. And it's all about self-inquiry. So you take this belief that's not serving you, I'm not good enough, and you apply four questions. The first question, is this true? And so many people will be like, well, I have a lot of evidence that it's true, so it might be true. And it's like, okay, write that down. That's totally fine. Yes, no, or maybe. The second question is, do you know this to be true without a shadow of a doubt? So do you know that this is a fact, that you're not good enough? And if there's any doubt, then the answer would be no. Now, I say to people, if anybody has any answer other than no, talk to me and we'll work it out. Because the answer should be no to this. It is not a fact that you are not good enough, because you can't really define good enough. Question number three is, what happens when you buy into this belief? So now we can agree that it's a belief, it's not a fact, even though our brain sometimes makes it seem like a fact. And we can write down and figure out, what are the patterns that I fall into when I'm buying into this belief? You know, I don't take action. I sit on the sidelines. I play small. And really what happens when you buy into this belief is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It literally feeds into itself. And you take actions or don't take action, then you get the same result that you expected, and it just becomes this vicious cycle. So then the fourth question is, what could happen if you chose to believe something different? So this allows people to really open up to, like, well, who could I step into, and what identity could I live with and step into if I just chose to believe something different? That's the four questions. And then I'll say to them, okay, cool, finish this sentence. The truth is, and write out something that serves you better than that other belief. So maybe you don't go with, like, the truth is I am good enough, just because it's opposite. But maybe you go with, like, the truth is I am always improving, or I have the tools to succeed, or something like that, that allows you to move forward and stops you from, like, kind of sabotaging yourself and your success.
It's actually very helpful. I'm glad you walked us through that practice. That was actually very, very helpful. Cool. You know, so Kevin, you've encountered and worked with extremely high performers. Does every single one of them not deal with imposter syndrome? And if that is the case, why do we all see it as a bad thing?
So what's actually funny is, the people who are more successful often deal with more imposter syndrome. Mm. And I've recently been speaking on imposter syndrome in a couple of mastermind talks that I've done recently. And one room we had 35 people, you know, people running multi-million dollar businesses. Another room we had 110 fitness coaches, some of whom are over $1 million in income, actually many of whom were. And when I asked them who has felt imposter syndrome before put your hands up, every single person put their hand up. And I feel like that's a pretty good cross-section of successful people. And if every one of them has felt imposter syndrome, then wouldn't it make sense that imposter syndrome is actually a prerequisite for success, right? If all the successful people have felt it, wouldn't it mean that you actually kind of have to feel it in order to be successful? And the truth is that, like, that's the case. And actually the funny thing about imposter syndrome is the wording of imposter syndrome only actually came around in like 1978, I think. And it was actually originally called imposter phenomenon, which sounds a lot different than imposter syndrome, right? Imposter phenomenon is like, oh, this is a part of the human condition that I am currently experiencing. It's a phenomenon. I currently feel like a fraud. Versus imposter syndrome is like, a syndrome means like there's something different about
like it's an affliction, right?
It's an affliction. Yeah, it's like I can't get out of this, right? So somewhere along the way, someone changed the wording to make it sound like this horrific thing, when in reality, it is part of the growth process. If you want to grow, like, I mean, think about it. If you're doing something you've never done before and trying to grow, by definition, you are an imposter. You are a fraud. You've never done it before. You're trying to learn to do it. So why is that a bad thing to be feeling a little bit like an imposter? A lot of my clients that I've worked with, we've really worked on having them look at it as like, awesome, this is now I'm stepping into a growth phase. Can we change the verbiage even from imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon to growth phenomenon or growth opportunity? Because that's really what it is. You're stepping into an opportunity to make mistakes, probably feel stupid, and grow from it.
So what about, and something else, Gavin, you talk about is this notion of perfectionism. For instance, are perfectionists trying to be perfect, or are they just trying not to be found out?
That's a great question. I think it's a little of column A and a little of column B. And I also think that this whole idea of perfectionism is a bit of a ruse. I think a lot of people who say they're perfectionists are really just, it's just a mask for procrastination, because they're, like you said, they're afraid. They're afraid that their incompetence is going to be found out. So they just don't take action, because if I don't take action and no one sees anything, then I can't be found out.
You know, years ago, let me ask you this. Years ago, I read a book by a Navy SEAL, and the author's name was Richard Makowitz. And I'm going to say this was 20 some odd years ago. And this was long before the advent of any social media. There was barely an internet. He and I became very close because I found him. I just called him up and I said, I know that you'd work in martial arts. Would you train me? He said, if you pass a test. And I'm like, well, what kind of test? He's like, it's a test. And we're talking about a Navy SEAL, and he's being very vague. It's kind of freaking me out a little bit. And I'm like, well, what's the test? He's like, well, if you come to my dojo, we'll talk and we'll see if you pass the test. And I'm like, I don't know if this guy's going to drop me off in the jungle somewhere in LA, even though there's no LA jungle. Yeah. But anyway, I go, Gavin, and I meet this guy. And we become very, very good friends. And what he did was, in addition to being a Navy SEAL, once he got out, he became an author when guys were not doing that. He trademarked his own martial art. People were not doing that. But we started to work out. We started to become very good friends. He was, without question, the toughest human being I'd ever met in my life. And long before this became a thing, long before anybody talked about cold plunge therapy, my guy says to me, and again, maybe 25 years ago, you need to take a cold shower every single day. And I'm like, man, that sounds fucking terrible. That sounds horrible. Why would I do that? Quote, it will cut a toughness groove in your brain. And I never forgot that line. It will cut a toughness groove in your brain. Do you personally believe that? And is this something you do?
Yeah. So this is where, you know, our mutual friend Craig and I somewhat disagree. And Craig makes a good point that, you know,
we're talking Craig Ballantyne.
Yeah. Craig Ballantyne makes this point that doing a cold plunge or a cold shower is not required for success. And I agree, right? Warren Buffett does not you know, never did cold plunges, right? In fact, he drank like three Cokes a day and just like chilled out. And so totally makes sense. But for someone like me, and it sounds like someone like you, who needed a little bit of, we'll call it necessary friction to get to the next level, it did exactly that, right? It showed it, what it does. So I start every shower cold, and I live up in this, in the middle of Canada, where it's cold as heck in the winter. So that water is starting real cold when I just crank the shower on first thing in the morning. And what it does is it reminds me that I can do hard things. So you had mentioned this, like cutting the kind of like the toughness groove. For me, it's just reminding me like hard things are not an alarm bell. Like I don't need to freak out when something is hard. I can breathe. I can find myself and I can get through it pretty easily and recognize like it's almost never as bad as we cook it up to be in our heads. And I'm sure you did not enjoy the experience of doing cold showers every day, but at the same time, you're still here. You didn't die and you're okay.
No, you're right. You're right. And I actually feel like I felt like I accomplished something. Like that's a win. That's a win. That's a win, yeah. Right there. That's starting the day with a win. Is it, do you start the shower? Is it 30 seconds of cold water or is it 5 minutes of cold water? Does it matter?
So I actually I'll start it and basically until it gets warm. So usually, that feels like 2 minutes and up here in Winnipeg, Canada, but it's probably 20 to 30 seconds. And then I'll finish it cold as well. And I'll do that for about 10 deep breaths, which I don't know how long it is, but it's like, hey, I can find my breath. I can find my breath. One other thing that I'll do is, you know, on the weekend, I'll go to the gym. We got a steam room and I'll do steam where I'll just meditate, close my eyes, think about my vision and my goals. And then I'll do a 2 to 3 minute like cold shower, as cold as I can handle, just make sure my whole body gets the cold water and I can sit in that and find some comfort in it. And I'll do like 2 or 3 rounds of that. Mm. That's generally my, cause I want to buy a cold plunge. A friend of mine owns a great company, a cold plunge company. I want to buy one, but it's one of those things that, you know, they're not cheap. And, hey, cold showers work for now.
That's practical. You'll get there soon enough. All right. So before you go really quickly, so you visualize, you meditate, do you journal? And if so, what does that do for you?
Man, journaling was probably one of my gateways into mindset work, to be honest. And I say to people who are, you know, I'll tell you, I was the most apprehensive about doing this woo-woo. Like you said, off the hop, I was a hockey bro, man. I was laughing at people who were doing this stuff. But when I started to journal, particularly started to journal and think about what I was grateful for, what I realized was it's like having a conversation with yourself. So it allowed me to get all the stuff that was rumbling around in my head, get it out and on paper. And for those of you in particular who may have like some challenging thoughts and some like scary things going on in your head, which is totally okay, it takes the power away from those thoughts. So when I write down, angry thought or something that scares me, I can see that it's just words on a page. And if I read those words, it gives me a certain meaning. But if Jim were to read those same words, he'd think something different. So you can recognize like the power that we're giving to these words and these stories comes from like the emotions and the beliefs that we're kind of putting on top of them. So journaling for me just allows me to get out of my own head, allows me to, you know, work through some things that I need to work through. And then it's a constant reminder for me that I always have this tool that I can turn to when I need it. Like you can always type something in your phone in the notes app or carry a little journal around and you're always going to kind of have that little outlet for you.
No, exactly. That's one of the questions I like to ask too. Is it a notes app or is it physically a diary that you write in? Let me ask you this. Is it a 5-minute process? Is it a 30-minute process? How long do you journal?
For me, I try and do, I try and go as short as possible, just as much as I need. So generally that works out to 5 to 10 minutes. I come downstairs in the morning. I turn the kettle on to get things going for my morning drink. And I just pick up my pen and I start writing. If I'm out of the house or if something comes up, maybe I'm on a walk or something, I'll just pop it into my notes app. But I start journaling, and generally all I do is, what am I grateful for? What are some things that, just any experiences that I had like yesterday or whatever, that might be of note that I might want to come back to and remember. And then I'll just do a little check-in on my emotional state. I call it like emotional regulation. How am I feeling right now? What might that be trying to teach me? And then I finish it with a couple of affirmations and I'm off to the races.
So you check the thermometer. So before you go, what about this? That's, you mentioned it, the morning drink. What about the evening drink? I'm not going to stereotype or generalize. Some of my favorite athletes ever are hockey players. I know a lot of hockey players, and I know a lot of hockey players that like to drink, and I like to have a cocktail or two on the weekends. I know your guy Craig tells the story about how he would grind and grind and grind and then just go hard one night and undo all these great things, these great things they did during the week. I'm kind of curious. You actually tell a great story about drinking, in that it's the only drug that if you do it, people are like, well, why aren't you doing it? If you don't do it, I mean, like, where do you come out on that? Will you still consume an adult beverage? And give me that story and that analogy, because I think it's really, actually, it's funny, but it's telling.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're sitting at a pub with a bunch of friends and everyone's having a beer and you choose to have a Diet Coke, it's the only quote unquote drug that people will say, why aren't you having it? Right. If everyone was sharing a needle with heroin in it, I don't even know if that's how you get heroin, so sorry. But if everyone was sharing, you know, IV drugs, no one would say like, well, why aren't you doing it? Right. But they say that about alcohol. And look, honestly, I'll have a beer maybe once in every 2 or 3 months if I feel like it. But the big thing for me, and the reason why I chose to, I wouldn't say stop drinking, because I do have one the odd time, is that alcohol had some power over me, and I didn't want that to be the case. I never would have considered myself an alcoholic. I did have a problem with it when I was younger, for sure. Binge drinking, as many of us athletes do to blow off steam. But I want to be the one who's in control, and I want to be the one who decides, yes, I do want to have myself an adult beverage, or no, I'm not going to, because I don't need that to have a good time. And I've actually found that, you know, it was a social lubricant for me as an awkward kid. I've found that I'm actually more fun. I feel like I'm more fun socially now that I don't drink.
Hmm. So Gavin, are you guys masterminding in Costa Mesa this May?
Yes, we are. We are. And as excited as I am for you to share that, the event is sold out, my man. It is sold out. We got some huge speakers. Event is sold out. However, me and one of our other coaches are running a 1-day event that does still have some space. It's called Mindset and Marketing. So we're kind of combining your story work and figuring out what stories might be holding you back, as well as using your story to kind of build an inside out marketing plan. So marketing through your own story. So yes, we are masterminding. Craig Ballantyne will be there. We've got some great speakers, myself, two of our other coaches on our team. I think we got 65 business owners coming into Costa Mesa.
Well, the reason I ask that is because we are broadcasting right down the street. Right where I am right now is right down the street from wherever you are going to be. I saw that. So that definitely piqued me. I really was interested to see that, because I'm not far. I'm probably 5 minutes from wherever you are. So the one day that you're doing, are there tickets? Is there availability? If people want to take part in that, can they still?
Yeah, they can. They can. We're running it pretty low key.
Stealth?
In terms of like, there's no information.
You're on the
you
low.
Can send, yeah, that's fine. We can send, you can send me a DM on Instagram at GavinMchale1 if you're interested. If you say, hey, I heard you on Jim Rome's podcast and I'm interested. And Jim, like, honestly, man, we got to make it happen. If you're going to be that close and you're going to be in town, I got to make sure that we see you.
Yeah, no, I'd love to slip in the back door and be a part of that and just watch you guys do what you do. I'd love to see you guys. Love to hang out with you guys. That'd be great. So we'll set that up. Gavin, listen, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the message. I appreciate the advice on mindset. I'm glad that we finally got together to do this. It's everything I thought that it would be. Once again, really quickly, if they want to find you on social, what is the best way to do so?
Yeah, Instagram at Gavin McHale one is the best place to find me. I'm working on sharing. It sounds like you're picking up what I'm putting down too. I'm working on sharing some good content there that can help people shift their perspective.
You know I am. I'm all about that. I'm all about the mindset, and this is why I'm doing this side hustle to my side hustle, and I'm all about that life. So great to have you. I will look for you in May when you guys get here. I appreciate it, Gavin. Have a great day. Have a great time until then, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jim.
There you go. From hockey bro to mindset coach with a ton of invaluable advice on how to convert a fixed mindset into a winning mindset and how to shake that middle class mindset. Best practices from a dude who realized early on. Best practices from a dude who realized early on when he got into a brawl during a hockey game, it wasn't the opponent that punched him in the face, but rather the universe itself. Has that happened to you? Is it currently happening to you? If so, realize it, absorb the full contact of it, and then lean into it, because the only way out is straight through, and what got you here won't get you there. Once again, my thanks to Gavin McHale. If you got as much out of that as I did, please reach out to him and let him know that. And if you continue to find value in this podcast, please be sure to subscribe to it and leave a review if you haven't already. In the meantime, identify your personal mission, become obsessed with that mission, and then execute on it daily, even hourly, all in, all out, every freaking day from here on out. The standard is, in fact, the standard above feelings, and set that freaking standard every day of your life. As always, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you all very much, and I will see you next time right here on The Reinvention Project with Jim Rome.